Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Barishi. Jacob's here.
Hey, folks.
And we're here again.
Yes.
After a month away. Mm-hmm. Well, where were we during that period?
He spent winter in your caves wondering where the AnCast was. When you would come out of the light to see another podcast.
Anyway, we were very busy in the last month. We're back now. Higurashi is unfortunately, I don't know, say permanent hiatus.
It's in the bin.
Yeah, too many false starts on that one. Sorry, guys. We are working on another series review, but I'm not going to tell you what it is until it comes out. Mm-hmm. That'll be a fun surprise.
Yeah.
AnCast series review, Cross Ange.
No, you just said you wouldn't tell them. Now the surprise is ruined.
No, I'm glad I said that because
it's definitely not going to be. Yeah.
It's definitely not Cross Ange. Anyway, it's been like a month. I've been keeping up with anime. I know you've been keeping up with anime. Do you want to talk about anime first or do you want to talk about movies first?
Movies maybe.
All right, let's talk about movies
first. This is the part that the people skip if they don't like movies. So.
Sure.
Make it easier on it,
sure.
But right at the beginning.
It's floated. Sometimes we used to do it that way. It used to be like, let's do it at the beginning of the show. Uh-huh. But then lately I've kind of been floating it to the end because I figure, why not put the anime stuff up front? And then if you want to talk about something that's technically off topic, it can go at the end of the show. But, you know, this podcast is almost 10 years old. And it really doesn't have, like, one format.
You know, I started writing for ANN December 1st, 10 years ago.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
2008?
Yes.
Yeesh.
Yeah. Old.
It's a long time
old.
ago. Movies. What have we seen? Ralph Breaks the Internet was a feature-length commercial for Disney Brands.
Yes, for Oh My Disney.
With some feeling thrown in at the end. Now, I don't want to say that it was like, what if Disney made the Emoji Movie? But that is what it reminded me the most of.
Right, which I think I both agree and disagree with you because I think is a fair comparison in terms of like what the movie accomplishes emotionally or aesthetically versus like, which is a little bit. It accomplishes a little bit versus like what it's built out of, which is just marketing. You're right. Like, I get what you're saying. Like, this is marketing the movie. It could have been anything. They chose Ralph because they were like, this is the easiest thing to connect to the internet or whatever. And this is, you know, they had this sequel in development and they're like, well, okay, this is the one that we can attach all of this type of branding to. However, I disagree because the Emoji Movie is so unwatchably, like, heinous. Like, it is so physically painful to sit through that I feel like it's really unfair to compare this like perfectly benign, easy to sit through movie to like the Emoji Movie, which is,
I know,
really very dreadful. Every second
it's
of it is agony.
It's just that there's no other film that is a more direct comparison. Have characters traveling through a sort of unimaginative physical representation of the internet, and they go, hey, recognize this brand and 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 this brand, and like, here's what it looks like when you do an internet search and there's physical email and all that stuff.
Jokes about Disney princesses wearing Disney princess pajamas, which you can purchase at fine retailers.
Yeah, I'm gonna get to
that. Was the most transparent like part of the film. Like,
I'm gonna get to that.
Oh, okay.
But I'm just saying, like, that's why it reminds me of the Emoji Movie so much, is because that is also basically what that was. Like, that was that entire film for the most part. Yeah. The princess stuff, like, once they get to the Disney part of the internet,
it goes
full tilt brandapalooza for the entire rest of the movie.
Yeah.
The Disney princess is like, now, okay. I could be getting my information wrong here, but I'm pretty sure that I read something somewhere. Someone told me something where they put out that first teaser trailer back when it was still called Wreck-It Ralph 2, which it isn't anymore. And they put the Disney Princess scene in the trailer. And then the internet went fucking crazy for it. And so they not only expanded it, which is deeply expanded in the film.
Oh, yes.
And they not only expanded it, they added an extra scene. So, like, the Disney Princesses aren't just, like, a cameo. They are in there for, like, 10 minutes, and they introduce a major plot twist, and then they're crucial at the climax of the, like...
Crucial as in they, like, oh, let's find a way to keep Ralph from, like, hitting... Ralph is gonna fall from a really high place like he did in the first movie, and let's make the Disney Princesses the ones to break his fall.
If they weren't there, it would be a problem. I'm just saying...
Yeah, no, I'm just... It feels very sewed back in. It's like, all right, so the Disney Princesses suddenly show up and solve this problem. It's like, all right, people wanted more of these, so we'll put more of them. But, like, the most transparent branding moment in the movie, which is, like, it's hard to pick one, because there are a lot. Like, Taraji P. Henson as the algorithm for YouTube was something that I had a lot of thoughts and feelings about as a former slash sort of current YouTuber, but I was like, this is not a benevolent figure, this character.
Yeah, no
kidding. But the Disney Princesses showing up in pajamas that are branded to them that you can definitely purchase, that and talking about how comfortable the pajamas are and how great it is that they get to take off their dresses and lounge in these cool jammies that make them look cool and are all themed to their films. Like, it was the most commercial thing I think I've ever seen in a Disney movie.
Yeah, you can buy all that stuff, too.
In a Disney movie ever, maybe.
I went to Disneyland, like, last week, and they had... So, here's the funny thing. Like, the merchandise still says Wreck-It Ralph 2 on it because that was all made, you know, long before... Like, before the film was... That film was delayed, I think.
Yes.
And so they delayed it, and they took Wreck-It Ralph 2 off of the title. All the toys that are out now still have the old logo, but one of them is a gigantic box set of all the princesses from that scene. It's like 100 and some bucks. All of them from that scene. So they're immediately like, yeah, we gotta
princesses and jammies.
Yeah, I'm sure they had all those jammies as well.
Yeah.
But that stuff, like, that's where it's like, the stuff is kind of cute. It's kind of clever. I like those characters. I love animated Disney movies.
It was a perfectly fine film, but I couldn't...
Some of the references were
so plastic.
Cute.
Like, this is a really nice thing that is 110% made of plastic.
But it is overwhelmed by just the crass fucking capitalist marketing. Like,
pure marketing.
Even if it's a little cute, even if it's a little clever, even if it makes you feel a little warm inside, it's just like, bleh, money. Yeah. Like, bleh. Like, go out and buy all this
shit.
Go
out and purchase all this stuff. It is a fully... There's some art to it, but it is... So deeply compromised that it doesn't... Nothing about it feels very sincere.
I'm just going to say this. What the fuck is with that stupid bunny kitty?
That was a thing where they were trying to... Okay, so for those of you who haven't seen the film, there was... I'm sure you saw... Before the princess clip, there was a clip in the trailer. This was before the princesses thing, where there's a bunny attempting to stuff a stack of pancakes into his mouth. We didn't have the full context for that.
No, we did. No, you did. It's an iPad game where you slide the pancakes to the bunny and you slide the milkshake to the kitty.
I understand.
They released that on its own. It wasn't part of a teaser. They released just that video on its own, out trying to make it viral. It did not really go as far, I think, as they thought it would, but a tremendous amount of the merchandise is based on that.
Yes.
Like, there's a ton of kitty bunny.
Well, here's the weird thing. That clip is in the film, but it's after the credits, or after at least, like, you know, 40 seconds of the credits, and it is divorced from... If you were to try and figure out where it was in the movie originally, continuity-wise, it would be very difficult to figure out. It's like, where does this go? It doesn't really go after the end of the movie, and it's hard to figure out where in the middle it could have even gone. It seems sort of divorced from context, but it's just there, and they just stuck it after the credits because they were like, well, this was in all the marketing, and we made a bunch of shit for it, so, like, even though it didn't go and it doesn't really fit in the film, we'll just... That's kind of how the movie feels, is it just feels like this corporate product. Like, there's some emotion in it, but it's all been buried in fucking plastic marketing. So yeah, that, yeah well, I did not feel anything for the film.
Not only that, but like
it was fine.
The,
but
the joke isn't funny. The joke is
like bitter and mean.
Yeah, Ralph like force feeds pancakes to the bunny until it dies, until it explodes,
and a 3-year-old is looking at her iPad and screams, and that's it. And it's like, this is like a DreamWorks. Like this is like
it's not even really a DreamWorks joke. It's like, it's just not
what a blue sky joke.
Why is it so weirdly mean-spirited?
I don't know.
I don't get it. Like, and I'm not like offended by it. It's just like,
it doesn't fit. Yeah. Like, it's just not
kind of mean. Like Ralph is just an asshole who murdered that rabbit. What?
Well, they made Ralph stupider in this, like by a lot. A lot of the plot necessitates that Ralph.
Yeah, he was just kind of a clod in the first one.
Yeah,
in this one, he's
clumsy.
Like stupid.
In this one, he's actively dumb. Well, like in the first movie, which I've seen several times because I do quite like it. I realize that it's flawed, but I sort of think it's more fun for its flaws. I really like the first Wreck-It Ralph. It's messy, but I like it. And Ralph, I know, is not stupid in that he's little simple-minded, he jumps to conclusions easily, and he's extremely clumsy. That's not the same thing as just a fucking moron, and he's just dumb as fuck in the second movie. And everybody's kind of been boiled down to a little more simple essentials. I don't know. It's, yeah.
How do we get another story out of this?
How do we get another story out of this?
Well, anyway, that was that movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, weirdly, like, it felt like paced in the same way that Incredibles 2 felt like paced. Like,
which one is better, Incredibles 2 or this?
Or, I don't know.
I mean, Incredibles 2 felt like a compromised artistic vision of some kind. Like, it was empty, but it felt like, here's the cobbled together.
I didn't dislike either of them.
Me neither. But I didn't like either of them.
They both go in the same bland box.
Yeah,
like,
they're
blando. I consumed that burger.
I ate that burger.
It's a wrapper that's in the dustbin now.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. That's the impact. Sadly, not gonna like think about it a lot. Like, I think about The Incredibles too because I'm the sort of person that's gonna sit around and think, why didn't I like that? What was wrong? Like that kind of like.
Yeah.
I'm gonna think about Brad Bird's entire filmography in relation to this film and what it might say
because
about the
Brad Bird,
like all this shit. You know,
provocateur is too strong a word, but Brad Bird has feelings, and even if he's making a movie for families, he's going to get his feelings out at you, and they're going to be sort of razor edged and very blunt. And that is not an incredible. Incredibles 2 has no sharpness whatsoever. It doesn't feel like it's saying particularly anything that
it's,
might bother anybody
not,
at all.
Yeah. I got excited because the Blu-ray said that it had a commentary track on it. And I was like, oh shit, well, is Bird going to sit there and explain like
what happened to the film? Yeah.
What was not, I'm not, of course, I'm not expecting him to sit there and give me some kind of a, you know, well, here's all the problems we had during development. But at least, well, here's what I was going for with this. But it's not that. Brad Bird introduces the commentary track, and then the commentary track is for animators.
Yeah.
So they're not talking about
the the most insight we get is like a handful of deleted scenes that are very obviously not, like not all of it. It's like representative of huge plot lines that were cut.
Yeah.
These are not deleted scenes. These are like, this is back when, this is one scene you get back from when this was a different movie entirely.
Yeah, there's a wholly different, totally different plot line that frankly seemed more interesting.
Yeah, I don't
me.
Know that it would have been a better movie, but it seemed like a more cohesive, like a direct message of some kind, which Incredibles 2 does not have. But the original treatment, it seems, was more focused on superheroes as entertainment, as a reality TV thing. The Elon Musk character was the villain. His sister did not yet exist at that time. And it was, he's a sympathetic villain, I think, is what they were going for. But we don't get enough details on that just through the deleted scenes. All we know is that that Helen Parr was like, well, I don't know how to, I don't know how to perform heroism for an audience based on these narrative structure beats that reality TV functions on. And that's an interesting plot line. Nothing like that in the final movie.
Yeah,
they cut all that out.
Yeah, that would have been interesting if they'd fleshed it out.
I don't know if it would have been a good movie, but at least I understood what the message was. Incredibles 2 is just sort of it's a product. It's a plastic burger wrapper, and it's a good burger, and it's made well, but that's it.
Now it's the highest grossing domestic animated film of all time.
Yep. Well, they waited just the right amount of time to release it because people were, you know.
Yeah, you gotta wait. Like, that's the thing, is that those pent up, it's like those things are like unmined rivers of gold when you have something people love and it hasn't been, you know, strip mined in the last 10 years or whatever, 15 mm-hmm. years. Incredibles went like 14 years.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, the pent up demand, like same thing with Star Wars. Like, they went forever. not forever, 2004 to 2015, you know, a little over 10 years, and they hadn't revisited the original trilogy stuff since the 80s, really, not in any real way. So that's why it was such a big fucking deal.
Yeah.
But there's not that much stuff like that really left.
No, everybody's in a rush to try and continue it or reboot it, and so it's like, you gotta wait, you gotta hit the sweet spot before you bring it back.
I think Disney may have learned their lesson with Star Wars, though, because, like, it's like, okay, people actually don't really want one of these every single fucking year.
No.
We gotta pull back, they've gotta be special. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that it's, like, every 2 years at minimum. Like, minimum every 2 years. Mm-hmm. Maybe every three. But, you know, that's... You can't sustain what they've built.
Mm-hmm. We'll always have The Last Jedi. We'll always have The Last Jedi making old nerds mad, and like little kids and families don't give a fuck and they thought it was good. We'll always have that.
Before we get to anime, though, I do want to briefly mention last night we saw The Favorite, which was really, really good. And if you're looking for something that is not... Avengers.
If you want something
Harry
that's
Potter.
Just weird art, you want some weird fucking character driven art that has like just enough of a message but is mostly just interested in entertaining you. When I say art, it's like not going to put you to sleep. This is entertainment. This is high melodramatic entertainment, crazy fun, really fun to watch, but it's art. It's not pure capital trying to get you to purchase brands. Go see The Favorite and remind you maybe why you love movies if you're a cinephile.
Yeah, it's basically like France is at war with England. This follows Queen Anne and her... What is the name of... What's the position that Rachel Weisz holds in that movie?
Her favorite.
No, I mean...
she doesn't have an official title that we've given. She is a lady. She's a lady. There are many lords and ladies at court, and she is the lady that spends all of her time with the queen the queen fucking loves her.
Sure, we've never... Yeah.
They never specify, like...
No, they don't. They don't, but I'm just saying maybe there is.
Yeah, they never specify if there's a cabinet position. Women can't hold cabinet positions. She's not part of parliament. Her husband is in parliament. She's just a lady in court that... Right. Just so happens to spend all her time with the queen for some reason, and you know, and then Emma Stone shows up and she's like, I was a lady and I lost my title because my father went crazy and burned down our house, and now I'm going to work as a scullery maid in the queen's palace, and I'm going to take my title back by any means necessary. And the best friend of the queen, the lady we were mentioning earlier, who is she played by?
Rachel Weisz,
is like, I fucking see what you're doing. I fucking see it. And it is a competition for the queen's favor. And the queen is not here anymore. She is dying of age and disease. And
she has gout and a stroke.
She has gout, a stroke, and also dementia. And she's, you know, so... It's quite fascinating. If you like that kind of thing, it is real good. If you liked, this is by the same director. I don't remember his name. Yorgos something. He's Greek. And he directed The Lobster and The Killing of a Sacred Deer. I have not seen The Killing of a Sacred Deer, but I will check it out because I really dug The Favorite. And I liked The Lobster, but The Lobster is like kind of an aborted chimera of an interesting metaphor. Like, a lobster has a lot of great scenes, but as a whole... There are parts that don't work so well. He just tried to do way too much. He tried to, like, it's a way too big metaphor for contemporary relationships in the UK or whatever, which is what it's about. So this works a lot better. It's way more accessible. It's simpler. It just kind of cuts directly to the bone. And yeah, go see The Favorite. It is real fun to watch.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. If you like
fucked up shit, it's real fun to watch.
Yeah. Cool. I liked it a lot. All right. Well, so we should probably talk about anime. Next week. So this is the thing that I watched. We'll get to fall season stuff in a bit here. But the thing that I watched was the Broly, the Legendary Super Saiyan. It's a Dragon Ball Z movie from 1993.
Ah.
The reason that I watched this is because next week I have to go cover the premiere of Dragon Ball Super Broly, which they're bringing this character back. I didn't know shit about Broly. Like, nothing. I've never seen Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah.
I've watched plenty of Dragon Ball Super at this point, which I really like. Mm-hmm. Going back to Dragon Ball Z, I'm not so sure I'm ever really going to go back and watch that.
I watched a lot of Dragon Ball Z growing up and never really liked it. I just watched it because all my friends would, like, watch it, or we'd have, like, a birthday party. Boys or girls, Dragon Ball Z was still a thing. And I never really cared for it either, but I agree with you. I like Super, and it's like, oh, I like Akira Toriyama's sense of humor, but I don't really like the 20 minutes later. You know, that's not really my thing.
The thing is, that is most of Broly. Yeah. Broly is the movie. The plot of Broly, the legendary Super Saiyan, is back on planet Saiyan, whenever the fuck that was. Now, I'm going to get a bunch of this shit wrong, so go ahead and get mad at me.
Forewarning.
It's fine. Tell me. From my understanding, now, this is how little I know about Dragon Ball Z. The film opened with Goku and Chi-Chi, his wife's name.
It's yes.
Chi-Chi. They are in line at... on Earth, I guess, and they're trying to get Gohan into a private school, and Goku's wearing a suit, and he's like flabbergasted by, oh, what do you want me to say? You know, because Goku's an idiot. He's going to screw up the entrance interview. This is relatable, huh, parents? Waiting for this movie to be fucking over, you yeah. parents in the audience. And so suddenly a dude from... Saiyan shows up claiming to have made a whole planet for Vegeta, and he's like, you're gonna be King Vegeta, I made this whole planet, we're gonna reestablish Saiyan dominance. And he's like, okay, I'll go with you. You know, Vegeta goes with him, and it turns out his kid is Broly, who is the legendary Super Saiyan with a power of 10,000.
Oh.
Right?
That's higher than 8 or 9.
Broly is really unstable and hates everybody, and especially hates Goku because he was born in the same little, like, birth pod that all Saiyans are born in, but his was right next to Goku's, and Goku wouldn't stop crying. So yeah. Broly has an irrational hatred that has got, like... that it turns like murderous, violent hatred of Goku that is activated on sight because of this.
Because Goku wouldn't shut up in the nursery.
Anyway, he's going to destroy the whole universe. Can Goku stop him? Yes, Goku can stop him.
Goku can stop him, and then 30 seconds later, the film will end.
Yes.
I was surprised by the abruptness. I only saw how it ended, and I was like, oh, okay, he beat him. And I swear to God, I blinked, and there were credits.
Yeah.
I mean, was like, whoa, no denouement. He just, okay.
There was still some interesting stuff in it, but like it struck me as kind of weird, because like, the movie was technically not canon. It's filler. It's like Shonen Jump one-off bullshit. Like, this thing hit theaters with the Dr. Slump cartoon in front of it. Like, it was summertime. Nonsense for kids back in 93. You know, which, yeah. Hey, cool, whatever. I like Dragon Ball. But this was Shonen Jump filler. Like, the bad guy dies, 30 seconds later, you're at the credits. Like, that's how it is. Get the fuck out of the theater. We got another crowd of kids coming in here to see this.
Yeah.
So, that's super abrupt. I'm hoping the new one is better. I'm assuming the new one will be better written. The new one makes
There's
Broly
no way
canon.
It can't be, right?
The new one makes Broly canon, uh-huh. which he was never before. It does not surprise me that Broly was a fan favorite character that everyone liked, and they brought him back for two more movies. There's another one called Bio Broly, which is exactly what it sounds like.
Has your
and then
character
there's yet
died.
Another one.
Has your character died in Dragon Ball Z? Well, either he's gone to hell or heaven and he'll be back, or he's a cyborg.
Yeah, one of
you have one of two options.
But he's definitely
here.
Not gone.
He's definitely not dead, though.
He's definitely not gone.
Maybe he's both.
I only watched the first one so I could be familiar with it. He needs to be a hell robot.
Well, I think, doesn't that happen to Frieza at one point?
Hellbot.
Kid Trunks comes back and...
Dude, I don't know. I told you, I hadn't seen it.
I know that Frieza comes back as a cyborg at some point, but I don't remember if he went to hell first or not. These are
know.
The questions for Dragon Ball Z fans. I know that Kid Trunks murders
There's a robot him. Factory right next to hell. They just dump him out there. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this is a fan favorite character, and it's just this. It looks like a 15-year-old edgelord's drawing of Goku, like in the margins where he's got the hair and like the big stupid muscles that like he walks toward the screen a bunch, and it just looks silly. Like, it looks really goofy. It really looks like. And here's the thing. So I'm watching this old dub, right, circa 93, and it has this butt rock 90s butt rock soundtrack that is hilarious. Now it's really embarrassing. Now, like, it's really cringy now. The performances are, you know, whatever. These are pretty old performances at this point. Vic Mignogna is voicing Broly. It doesn't sound anything like Vic Mignogna. It's interesting. But the butt rock really kind of adds to the sort of bullshit edgelord vibe. Like, this is kind of what I thought Dragon Ball was like. And I watched Super and I was like, oh, it's actually really good. But I watched this and I was like, oh, this is kind of why I wasn't really into Dragon Ball.
Right.
Because it's also really fucking stupid. Like, it's really well, fucking
and the
stupid.
Stupidity is fun when it's a joke. Like, when Shenron
But when you're supposed to take it seriously.
Yeah.
When you're like, oh my god, I can't believe it, blah, blah, but it's the dumbest shit.
Well, I'm fine if with stupid, but you gotta take it seriously if the pacing's a little better, but not if the pacing is really slow.
Yeah.
Like, Sword Art Online, that goes by real fast. I mean, Alicization has not. That's a little bit of a problem, is the pacing. But, yeah. Like, Sword Art Online, Season 1 or Season 2, the stupid comes hard and fast, and you're supposed to take it seriously, but by god, it's really entertaining.
Yeah.
Dragon Ball Z, it's too slow. Sorry, lol, it's too slow.
Yeah, I don't know, Super is way better, so I'm assuming that Super Broly will be good. Mm-hmm. Or at least entertaining. And apparently they've massively rewritten his story, which they would have to, because it is so dumb. And it really does feel like super fanficky, like, he can actually destroy entire systems with just like, it's just It is the fanfic.net version of Dragon Ball that I... Yeah, it's like a parody, almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Almost like a parody. But I'm looking forward to the premiere. And it's funny, I was I was whining because next Thursday is also when that new Spider-Man cartoon opens. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which I'm very excited to see because the animation style looks really neat, and it's Lord and Miller. Mm-hmm. And they made Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs and Clone High and 21 Jump Street, and like, I have yet to be let down. Mm-hmm. Or not have a good laugh at one of their movies.
The Lego movie, which had the Lego movie had no right to be any good at all.
I laughed and the whole
it
way was through.
And it's great,
right?
So clearly they care about things.
But that Broly premiere is the same day as Spider-Man. And I was like, oh man, well, I really wanted it. And I realized, I want to go see Spider-Man instead of Goku. I'll see Goku later. And I was like, man, this is fucking ridiculous. This is absurd. This is a dumb.
I'd rather see Spider-Man than Goku.
This is a dumb life that I'm living. It's not that I would rather.
A charmed life, maybe.
It's not that I would rather. It's just that they fell on the same day, and I was really excited to see Spider-Man.
It's just a funny thing to have to say. I'd rather see Spider-Man than Goku.
Yeah, I'm like, I am six. I bet I'm wearing Star Wars underwear, and then I check.
And then I check,
and I'm like, oh, I am.
Six plus a few decades, give or take.
Yeah, totally. So there's that. And the other thing that I finally got to see a little bit of was G Gundam, Mobile Fighter G Gundam, which I'd never seen and has been hyped up to me till the end of time. Like, I've had people very loudly selling me G Gundam as the best shit ever for at least 15 to 17 years,
same.
I feel.
I think... I was not put off of it, but I was straight up. I have seen the only part of G Gundam that I've seen is the last 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. I have seen that last 10 minutes multiple times. So I know how it ends, right? And I've seen nothing else. So I just was never in a hurry because I was like, well, I saw how it ends and it was fucking great, but I'm just not in a hurry to see how it starts or middles. But yeah, you got the Blu-rays in and popped it in and it was like, this is good shit. If you're the kind of person like me who was never really into Gundam and you don't have anything invested in somebody dumbing down Gundam and turning it into, I've got my action figures and I'm going to bang them together, since I don't have that, I was immediately pleased by what I was watching. I was like, oh, this is like Fist of the North Star, but Gundam. It doesn't even feel like a Gundam series.
Yeah, it's really entertaining.
It doesn't feel like a Gundam series at all.
But
no.
It's so good. Like, it's so like propulsive. The episode, like, the plots,
you know what it
just
does
zip
feel
right
like.
On, and it keeps introducing silly stuff that's like,
you know what it feels like? It feels like Outlaw Star.
I think I immediately like it more than Outlaw Star.
Oh, well, it has that, let me put it, it has the color design, the
pacing.
Yeah,
you're right on that front.
You know, but I'm not saying it is as visually similar or narratively, I'm saying tonally it is very similar. Yeah, and
I'm going to watch the whole thing. I think I'm going to scrap in for that one. It seems really good. So more of that, we'll be talking about that probably coming along. But that's kind of what, I only watched like three episodes of it, so I don't want to get too far into it. But those three episodes were fucking great. Like, they were all really, really good. Mm-hmm. Really entertaining, and there's crazy shit just around the corner all the time. You do get to watch this really fetishy scene of him entering his latex suit over and over and over and over again.
Someone at Sunrise has a thing for latex.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, so... That's G Gundam. What you keeping up with for fall? How's that stuff been going?
I'm keeping up with quite a lot, so I don't exactly know where to start with. I know that the two things that give
me... I'm gonna throw a show out. Okay. You tell me how it's going.
Oh, okay. Lightning round.
All right. Zombieland Saga.
It's fine. It's good. I appreciate what they're doing in terms of idle anime. Like, every time I'm like, eh, this is kind of... we used the word commercial earlier. Every time that my heart goes like, oh, well, this isn't really going for it emotionally. It's kind of holding back. It's playing too safe or too commercial. I'm like, compare this to literally any other idle anime. And I'm like, oh, right, that's the benchmark. The benchmark isn't other anime. It's other idle anime meant to sell you things.
Yeah.
So, like, so it is a little too commercial for me to really embrace with my whole heart. But it's entertaining. I still watch it on the day it comes out, which to me says that it's doing something right? But it's not my favorite thing of the season, just because I'm just kind of allergic to the commerce stuff right now, the too shiny, too polished stuff that doesn't really go for the jugular. But it's very good at what it does, and I, as far as I understand, the music is selling well in Japan, so they're probably gonna do more of it. We'll see.
Yeah, I've been watching it every now and then. I've caught plenty of it while you've got it on, and it's I feel like you've got it, like you've kind of hit it on the head there. It is a commercial, but it's the best kind of that sort of thing. Like, mm-hmm. it does have a lot of really good shit in it. I thought the scene with the lightning where they get struck by lightning and keep playing anyway was really good. It just, like, the animation just couldn't quite keep up with the concepts that they had, but like,
well, that's anime.
It was a really good idea that I thought, nevertheless, they still managed to execute on a bit. Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of stuff like that in there. You're like, oh, I get what you're going for here. That's a really good idea. Like, it's really clever. It's really, you know, it's got a lot of feeling in it, even though...
The feeling is restrained.
Feeling is restrained, and it definitely, it's like, oh, yeah, this is kind of touching. You want to buy some stuff? You know?
Well, that's the thing. So here's my issue with Zombieland Saga emotionally. Like, I honestly, comedically, I wish the show was more comedic. The comedy in it is all really good. It makes me laugh. It's smart, except when it needs to be dumb. Like, I think the comedy of Zombieland Saga is actually much better than the sentimentality. Both of those things kind of need to exist in Congress, given the premise. But my problem with the emotional aspect, and this happens over and over, this happened for Lily's episode, this happened for Saki's episode, this has happened repeatedly, is that they will set up a really interesting and emotionally immediate conflict where it's like, oh, that is interesting. And like, if you were put in that position, if you're a zombie and being a zombie affects their stories in some way every time, right? So that would be an interesting emotional conflict. And then cut to black and it's resolved, not exactly, with a song that you're supposed to purchase, right? That's kind of my issue, is like, they will build up this emotional conflict and then it will be not really resolved by a song that doesn't really, you know, they step right up to the plate and then they back off before they can say anything of any emotional heft, like before the conflict can get too immediate, and they just kind of resolve it with, well, everything will be okay, and also here's the song, and here's this new costumes for the idols. So that bugs me, and it's not a really big problem or anything. It's just like, oh, this keeps me from, like, really getting emotionally attached to this show. And, like, their most recent thing is Amnesia again. Like,
no.
Yeah. And I'm like, all right, it's playing too safe. Dramatically, it's playing too safe for me. But you know what? I'll watch it over basically 99% of other idol anime. So, you know, it is doing something right for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head there. I don't think I have anything to add to that. So Zombieland Saga, tell me about Run with the Wind.
It's good. Run with the Wind. I didn't know this, but it's based on a book by the author of The Great Passage, who was also adapted into an anime about a year or two ago. Mm-hmm. And like The Great Passage, this is not really aimed at, like, otaku. This is not really aimed at teenagers either. This is, like, aimed at people in their 20s and 30s. And it feels like it. And it is dealing with emotions that you haven't really... I don't think that people, unless they have like failed at something significantly and had to go now what and start over from somewhere, will quite understand, because it's not, Run with the Wind is not the kind of show where people look into the camera and everybody resolves their issues by talking to each other about the issue at hand or whatever and talking about their feelings. It's not that kind of show. Everything has to be resolved naturally, like through months of hard work. Eventually these people come closer together, and it's not realistic. It is a little tropey. It's a little heightened in the way that maybe a network TV show might be, but it's not anime-y. It's not otaku-y. Does that make sense?
Of course it does.
And what I really like about it is the idea that it's not like most sports anime, in that it isn't about a bunch of like people who really, really love this sport and are trying to become the best in the world at it. It's not the Shonen Jump type thing or a Haikyuu type thing where it's about, a team of troubled kids or whatever who are really talented at the sport and get better. This is a bunch of people who, like, have no business running at all. There are some people who are, like, you know, wonder kinds. There's, like, two or three who are really talented at running, and the rest of them, like, either are like actively not good at it or just kind of average. They're just people. And it's not about them trying to become the best runners in Japan. It's about them running every day in order to add structure to their life and make them feel like they can do things again, which is not, it's a completely different conflict, right? Mm. So it's about people taking back their life and taking back control over their life by proving that they can do this thing that they thought maybe they couldn't do. And so I don't think that they're going to qualify for, I'm curious, maybe they will qualify for the biggest marathon in Japan. But it doesn't seem like it's possible right now. It's two cores, so we're going to get, you know, we're not even quite halfway done with it. We're going to get more. But right now it seems absolutely impossible that they could run the Hakone Ekiden, which is like this giant marathon in Japan. But just the idea that they're trying and that they haven't stopped for whatever reason, and you see what running brings to their lives and the way that it improves just their daily routines and their relationships with other people in their lives and their ability to feel like they can get a job or that they can connect with other people. Like, that's what you're really watching for. It's not about running. Running is just the thing that was chosen to help these guys through the slump of their quarter life crisis, right? And sure. It's good. So, yeah.
All right. Before we get to the stuff that we've both been watching, Karakuri Circus, how's that going?
I'm not watching that.
Oh, you stopped.
Yeah, it's too rushed. So here's the thing. So it's not animated very well, and it just like plows through chapters and chapters of this material that I'm like, I can't. So I gave up like two or three episodes in because I love Ushio and Tora, but Ushio and Tora, as far as I'm aware, was adapted like, you know, two or three chapters, three or four chapters an episode. This is like 12 chapters an episode, and the story is not as, they are just plowing through it, and the animation is not very good, and the premise was a stretch for me to begin with. I was watching it because I liked the author's previous work, but the premise is weird and I don't really like it.
Yeah.
So sorry. Yeah. I love Ushio and Tora though.
Okay, so JoJo's, it's good. I've been watching it week to week and everything. Hey, it's listed show. It's good. Next show. It's good. Next show. It's good. What great commentary.
Sorry. Well, I mean,
no,
I can.
That's
I can...
not you. That's me. That's not you. You're great. Anyway, I feel like with JoJo's, I will have more to say later. There's not that much to say about it now.
Man, I don't feel that way, but then again, I made a 30-minute video explaining why I don't feel that way.
Well, but you're talking about, like, thematic stuff that is a little external. Like, it's... You're making a thesis about something grander there, which is, like, what's happening in the show right now. Well, getting to know the game.
But think about the... you're right, but that's me picking out, like, subtext of one thing that the show is barely... is, like, secretly talking about, but not on purpose.
Yeah.
So think about how much I have to say about the stuff it's actually deliberately talking about.
Right then.
You know, like, no, I love JoJo's Part 5. Like, this would have to shit the bed really hard for this not to be my favorite JoJo's yet. I love the conflict. I love the plot. The thing that, like, so for those of you who don't know, I made this video called JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, BK Do Crimes. I would like it if you would watch it, because I said a lot about the show in that already that I'm not going to repeat here. But what was introduced recently that was not in that video is that they've really started in on the main plot, which is, you see the opening theme, there's a woman there. Like, it's not just these five dudes, there's like a lady. And they just introduced her, and with her comes this enormous amount of like conflict and baggage for our heroes that I'm really excited about, because Trish is the illegitimate daughter of the man that Giorno, our hero, is plotting to murder and take his place. And now he's bodyguarding his job to endear himself to the big boss is to bodyguard his illegitimate daughter, who's kind of bitchy, but in a fun way. Like, she's likable immediately, but not because she's nice. She's a huge pain in the ass. But you like her for that, because you're like, I have no idea what she went through, but I'm sure it's very similar to all these other kids who are in this gang. They've gone through a lot of shit, and they don't get along with other people very well, right? And so, but Giorno is immediately, like, recognizes a little bit of himself in Trish, because he's also the illegitimate child of a villain, of a supervillain. And so he's like, oh no, she's like me. Oh no, I have to kill her dad to get what I want, to get the only thing I've ever dreamed about having. And he like, and so I'm fucking, that is great, that's a great premise, and I'm really excited to see how that plays out. And we haven't even dived right into that right away, because we're just spending more time with the other weirdos in his gang, not even Giorno specifically. And all those other weirdos have their own backstory and like baggage and stuff like that that I'm really excited to learn more about. I'm really interested in, I don't remember his name, but the guy who's has orange hair and he's dressed all in green, and he's the mom friend. He's a terrible mother. He's the bad mom of the team, because he like tries to take care of everybody and like make sure that everybody knows exactly what they need to do, what they need to get, that their like idiosyncrasies and their weird problems don't cause any trouble for the gang. But then when they fuck up, and he's very kind about it, he's like, all right, I've put all of your shoes right here, and I, you know, like, here's a snack for in your backpack and all that stuff. But if they fuck up once, he beats them. So he's like a bad mom. I'm just really curious to see where all this is going, and I don't know, something, I don't know what it is, it's something about Golden Wind sort of speaks to me on a very base level, and I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, I like it a lot too. Maybe not quite as much as you, but yeah, I like it a lot too. It's really good. I'm enjoying it week to week. I'm more like Stardust Crusaders, you know, I didn't watch it till you watched it dubbed on Adult Swim, and I watched it that way. This one, I'm actually keeping up with it. So mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really it's super compelling.
They've improved the art design and the animation a lot since even Diamond is Unbreakable. I remember every time a new JoJo's part was, man, you go back to JoJo's like part one and part two, the color design and what they're doing with the animation, it's like child's play compared to what they're doing now. Like every new JoJo's part, they've figured out something about how to execute it that makes it look and feel much stronger and more impressive. Like the art design and the animation and the pacing of that show has only ever gotten better with time. So part five looks way better than part four, looks way better than part three. Like I like part three's story more, but visually part four looks a lot better. So I'm just, it's really cool to see how their artistic execution of this material has only ever improved.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, well, before we wrap, there are two news items that I do think we should touch on. I would get into Thunderbolt, but I feel like let's do that next time.
Yeah, I think we're going to wait for like a climax on Thunderbolt, maybe.
It's so fucking good.
It's really good, but shoe has not fully dropped yet. I want to know what the big twist is.
I'm in the middle of putting together a bunch of year-end stuff for a variety of different places at this point, and all my end of the year, all my 2018, like best of 2018, is just number one, Devilman Crybaby. Number two, Thunderbolt Fantasy. Parentheses, it's puppets, but still.
Yeah.
That's going to be it. That's my number one. My number two, forget it. Everything else,
forget about it.
Yeah. Two news items that we should talk about.
Okay.
Number one, there's a little show coming to Netflix next year. You may have heard of it. It is called Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Yes.
Have you heard of that show?
In passing. I know some people really care. Is it like brain powered? It's one of those things, maybe
yeah,
one or two
it's
people.
Like Aura Battler done me.
Yeah, and it's like, all right, you oldie. Or yeah. Whatever.
So Netflix is the company that managed to burst through whatever was holding it back and had the resources to do it. Although, I thought about it the other day. I was thinking to myself, like, I think a couple of years ago, you'd have been like, well, who even really has the resources to burst through this kind of wall that's been put up around Ava? And, you know, I had a good idea of what the issue was that was holding it back, but it still would have taken quite a lot of money to solve.
Mm-hmm.
And at this, the thing is, at this point, any one of these companies would have the resources to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Crunchyroll is owned by who? Funimation is owned by who? Right. Sony. These companies have the money to break through whatever the issue was with Ava. So now in 2018, it's not a surprise at all. It's like, okay, it's just like which one of these fucking titanic...
Who got it to at first?
These titanic media mega conglomerates will sift through their couch for enough dimes to pay.
Well, and it makes sense given... it makes sense given Netflix's pursuit of anime is more demographically specific. Ava falls right in their wheelhouse. Yeah. Like Crunchyroll and Funimation are casting a wide net to anime fans in general, whereas Netflix is like, oh, we want to spend money on anime, but like for a very specific demographic, and that demographic is like the people, like the Japanese version of the people who are adjacent to like Mike Tool. Like it's a very specific kind of in their 30s.
The demographic is it's like
people who grew up on people who grew up on Evangelion and now
it's the guy in his 30s who reads manga on the train, man. That's who they're trying to reach. That's the that's the Gantz audience. That's the Tsutomu Nihei audience. That's that shit. That's who Shinji Aramaki always courts. Like that's it. I don't really associate that particularly with Mike, but
I could say you. I could have said you as well, but like people of that age.
But I don't watch any. I watch hardly any of that shit.
No,
I used to.
You don't.
I used to read like Gantz and stuff, but now it's like nah. But,
You know, Mike is like the Santa Claus of this type of person. It's hard to explain. It's just a demographic of people of a very specific age and interest.
I don't associate it with a Westerner. I associate it with a Japanese guy in his 30s who's reading manga on the train on the way to work. That's who I associate it with.
Yes.
So, you know, Ava falls right in that wheelhouse. I am super excited that it's coming back. I can't wait to hear everyone's crazy takes on it. It's going to turn the internet into a fucking mess when it comes out. It's fine with me.
Mm-hmm.
Give me 24/7 Evangelion. I'll never get sick of it. Mm-hmm. I love Ava like I love my cats.
Oh, God.
Like, I'll never get tired of it.
I
will always love it.
I'm glad, because I've been, like, humoring an Ava rewatch, like a full rewatch of the series, because I've revisited the movies more often because I like the rebuild movies and I don't like the original series, but I've been humoring a rewatch of it for a while, and I'm glad
humoring.
That I waited. Yeah, I'm serious. I'm like, well... I kind of want to see this again. I want, because my perspective, I know, has changed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I like the way it ends now, but I think I will maybe appreciate other aspects of it more. But I just never got around to it, and now it's perfect. Okay, Netflix, I will just wait till it drops on Netflix, and I'll marathon it when everybody else is doing it. And you know what's also dropping at the same time? I don't know if this was the other news item on your mind, but I'm definitely going to bring it up. Around the same time, we're getting that fucking Fruits Basket reboot. Which is...
It's not, but these are... one of these is a very Zach news item. The other two are very Jacob.
Oh, okay. Well...
So...
Well, I bring it up because...
Yeah, you're going to be a real Froob dude once more.
Yeah.
You're going to be Froobing it. I'm going to make this Froob thing happen. It's going to happen.
You just like the word Froob.
People are going to say Froobin.
Mm-hmm.
What you doing, Froobin? And that means they're watching
it sounds like
Basket.
It sounds like you're speaking Swedish or something. Froobin.
Can I get a number two with extra Froobin?
Yeah, with
the
extra Froobin. So I lost my train of thought. Oh, right. The reason I bring up Fruits Basket next to Evangelion, and like, you know, you could put Utena there too, but like this is all like mid to late 90s emotional apocalypse for teenagers that was like a formative experience for them.
Mm-hmm.
And all that is happening at once. And no, we're not getting new Utena, but we are getting a Kunihiku Hiko Ikuhara thing that I've read more recent interviews now, and he was like, oh yeah, I've actually, he said, people think I only want to do stuff about queer women, and it isn't true. It was just much easier to get that made, but I've wanted to make a thing about queer men for a while. So I'm okay. Now I'm curious. Like, so we're going to get that. we're going to get Fruits Basket, we're going to get Ava all at once. So it's just like the teenage apocalypse of the mid to late 90s is just all coming back at once, the teenage emotional apocalypse.
And then also 40 other shows.
Yes, but I don't, but just, those are the ones I care about. I'm just really, and so, and I'm also excited, I'm excited to see people who've never seen Evangelion or Fruits Basket experience it for the first time, and I want to see what their emotional reaction is to that stuff. Because it was, one was formative for me, one was formative for you, and I know both of these were formative to like a fucking ton of people, so.
Mm-hmm. Yep, helped shaped your young little mind.
Yep. Little 14-year-old Jacob, what's this? Like, yeah. 2 days later, weeping, staring into the distance. Yeah. Fruits Basket.
Yeah, totally. The other thing that I did want to make sure I brought up before we wrapped, speaking of Netflix, they are pulling the trigger on live-action Cowboy Bebop, which they announced on the same day as Evangelion, or the next day or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so the internet exploded once more. I don't think there is a chance in hell that that's going to be any good. I don't mean to be super pessimistic about it. What could possibly benefit from removing the animation from Cowboy Bebop? What could it? How could it be better or even comparable?
Yeah.
Why would you take that out? Are they going to adapt the episodes?
That's my question.
Is it just like, here's what you remember from this show, but now it looks like a Netflix thing?
Yeah, because it's a 10-episode limit. It's a Netflix standard 10-episode limited season with 45 to an hour-long episodes. And I'm... here's the thing. So I would be excited and would have been excited about a Cowboy Bebop movie. I would. I would have been like, this could be really cool. Yeah, this could be great.
2 hours.
2 hours, base it on Asteroid Blues, Ballad for Fallen Angels, Jupiter Jazz, and The Real Folk Blues. Base it on that, and you've got a crackerjack movie, you know, or just base it on Asteroid Blues and put a couple elements from the other episodes in a tone. But that's, you know, the rest of Bebop, the fucking around, is what makes it special. If it was just those 5 episodes, it wouldn't be special, but you can't literally transcribe that to something else. It's been done. You can't improve perfection. I'm sorry.
And so if they're not going to adapt the anime, what team of who is going to be writing new Cowboy Bebop stories? Because that matters a whole lot.
Yeah.
Who exactly is writing new Cowboy Bebop stories? I'm not just going to, like, you hand me something and you're like, hey, new Cowboy Bebop, who wrote it? Yeah. Who wrote this?
Well, here's the thing. I don't think they're gonna. I think they are gonna. They have more than enough material in those 26 episodes. I think they're just gonna cherry pick and they're gonna adapt. I don't think they feel the need to write new stories at all. And so that makes it double useless. It's like, why? So that means unless you are gonna, 7 out of 10 of those episodes are gonna have a completely different directorial style, which is what Bebop was. I don't think that's going to happen. So that just means we have, instead of a 2-hour movie based on the tone of the core episodes of Bebop, which would be great, we have 10 episodes based on the core. You can't stretch. The only way you could stretch that out, I guess, is to give Vicious a fucking backstory episode. I don't want any of that. Like, that Vicious is great because we don't learn, and he is an entity. He is like Michael Myers in Halloween. You don't give him a fucking backstory. He represents evil. Just don't, you know, you're messing with these archetypal things that were thought about really hard when they made Bebop. If you just turn it into like a generic narrative where it goes on longer and here's our bland cinematography that looks like every other Netflix thing. No, it's not going to be good. So I'm not against Cowboy Bebop live action. I think that would be really cool. But a 10-episode generic Netflix adaptation TV show is not the way to do it. I will be extremely surprised if it's any good.
I'm waiting for the first interview where I'll just scroll until I hit the 3 words, Game of Thrones.
Oh, God.
Until I hit that, I'm like, I'm all right.
See, there's some anime where I feel like you could do that, like Vinland Saga, Fate Zero, you know, say Game of Thrones.
For a tremendous
say Game of Thrones,
things.
I understand what you mean. Bebop, don't. No. No.
No, I bet they wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Maybe they would. Who knows? That is the thing, man. Bebop was the way it was because of this magic combination of people.
Yeah.
If you don't have that magic combination, but you can't just slap fucking Spike's face or put a dude in a suit that looks like Spike's and say, it's Spike, he's going to say stuff and do things. It matters who's writing to say stuff and do things. It matters.
Yeah, it does. Bebop is...
Where's Nobumoto?
She's sitting on her pile of money.
Where is she? Is she not here?
She's. They said that
if she's not here, I'm not so sure I want your product.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think that they could have made a really strong like movie that cribs from neo-noir thing, and like, you know, I think they could have made a strong movie. But if you're making a TV show, here's what made Bebop special. It changed genres every episode, and it was like a weird art project, right? Where there's cohesion there, but it is experimental. If you're not making an experimental TV show, don't make a TV show. Make a movie based on the least experimental parts of the story. But you're not going to impress me with your watered-down version of this experimental masterpiece, you know?
Yep. Well, anyway, I don't want to, you know, be like, there's no possible.
Maybe it'll be great. Yeah. Keep your expectations low, and maybe you'll be surprised, right?
We will have to watch it either way, so we'll find out. Surprise me.
Yes.
Surprise me.
Yes.
All right, we're done. Okay, that wraps us up, I think. Thanks for hanging out, Jacob.
Of course, anytime.
All right, we will see you all next week, I promise. The show will be here next week. Yeah, mm-hmm. See you then. Okay, that's our show. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Music, Stitcher Radio, all that stuff. Leave us comments and ratings. We'd really appreciate it. And we'll see you all next week.